Hey everyone, welcome to the Message Podcast this week. If you're new to the podcast, my name is Andy and I oversee our digital ministry here at Bridgepoint. Today we're excited to be starting a new series based on the book of James. Where is the first place you turn when things get tough? Is it social media? Maybe you post asking a question, or you just vent about what happened? Or do you run to a spouse or a friend pouring out your woes? While getting help from others isn't a bad thing, God desires something else. In today's message, the first in our series, Called Out, Called Toward, Called Up, Tyler teaches and answers the question, how do we live out our faith when life gets tough, and why does it matter?
All right, happy Sunday, Bridgepoint. How we doing? Everybody feeling good? Awesome. Welcome in to week one of a brand new series called Out, Called Toward, Called Up. We are going to be working through the biblical book of James for the next 5 weeks. It's going to be a little bit like going to the gym or the weight room for your soul. It's the type of thing that you know is good for you. It hurts a little bit, feels good later, but you know you got to keep pushing because it's going to be worthwhile. Okay, that's what's at stake. Don't quit on me. Don't give up. I'm in it with you. We're going to explore how James, in his writings, in the biblical book of James, calls us out, calls us toward, and called us up. I hope that this will be an encouragement to your soul. If you're a new believer and you're saying, well, what does it look like? How do I live in a way that honors God? You are in the right place. If you've been following Jesus for a long, long time and want to be challenged in your faith, to look more like Jesus and to live more of what he's called us to live, you are in the right place. If you are unsure, if you're a bit of a skeptic, this is the perfect time to tune in to the book of James. I'm excited about that. I'll tell you why. We're going to jump right in because I want us to together explore how James is going to call us out, call toward, called up. It's a series on the book of James. Here's what I mean. Let me give you a little background on this book. Okay, the book of James, why it was written. It was written by James. That's where it's got his name. Here's why that's important. James was the half-brother of Jesus. It's a very interesting perspective. Think about that. Jesus was conceived of a virgin, right? We know that story. That's his mother, Mary. Mary ended up going on to get married to Joseph. So Jesus had an earthly father, but he was not born by Joseph's bloodline. James, on the other hand, Jesus's brother, was. So James was the son of Joseph and Mary. Now, here's why I think this is wild. What would it take for you to believe that your sibling was the son of God? Right? What would it take for you to believe that your sibling was the son of God? I have a 2.5 year younger brother, all right? He's the worst between us, all right? It's just because he's the youngest. He currently lives in Papua New Guinea, works for the U.S. State Department, still has a full head of hair. He's a little bit taller and makes more than I do, but he's the worst, all right? I'm telling you, if he came and said, big news, Tyler, I think I'm God, I can't tell you how fast I would be like, hard pass. You are not God. You're a computer nerd that grew up in North Alabama in the room right next to me. I know you and you are not the Messiah, right? What would it take for you to believe it? Because James, on the other hand, James ended up giving his life because he believed that his brother was the Messiah. James gave his life because he believed that what Jesus taught, what Jesus did, that when Jesus predicted and executed both the death and his own resurrection from the grave, James was changed by it. If you're a skeptic of the faith, to me, this is one of the most convincing arguments to the reality of Jesus being exactly who Jesus said that he was. When his own brother that grew up right next to him in his life gave his life because of who his brother was. That's James. That's the perspective of this story. That's why I'm excited that we're going to walk through this, especially for some of you that are unsure about faith. You're in the right place. A little more perspective on why James wrote this letter that we call the Book of James. It was written in the early 40s AD to scattered early Jewish followers of Jesus. That's important because early 40s, so between 40 and 45 AD, most scholars, most historians believe that Jesus's death and resurrection was in the year 33 AD, at least thereabouts. So this is written between 10 and 15 years after what his brother had done. Okay, that's a helpful perspective because enough time had gone by that people were starting to live in the reality of what Jesus had done. His own brother, again, was wanting to encourage people about what his brother had done. This was kind of the reminder of saying, hey guys, remember what my brother said. Remember how he taught. Remember how he lived. Remember what his death, but especially his resurrection means to us today. And to take it one step further, this was a setting in which there wasn't necessarily a church on every corner, right? Like we're accustomed to. This was a setting in which people couldn't just show up to a church gathering. The church is people, not the building. People couldn't join a church gathering, be a part of a church gathering without feeling some level of persecution. In fact, many were still living fearing their lives, knowing that to believe and follow Jesus could very well cost them their literal lives. This is the followers, early Jewish followers. They grew up in faith. They recognized that Jesus' new way, new covenant, new promise was the real deal. And they were scattered, taking not only the message around this part of the globe, but also scattered, making sure they were literally running for their life. So James is also writing an encouragement to people that are going through tough times, like life and death times. Like, we hope that by following this, we'll stay alive. Can I take a moment and acknowledge the fact that in America, we ought to be grateful that I'm assuming most of us didn't give a second thought to whether we'd show up for church and walk out of it still living and breathing. But I also want to acknowledge that around the world, there are brothers and sisters in the faith that don't have that type of grace, that they know that the next church gathering they attend could be their last because someone will attempt to kill them. Someone will attempt to squelch this message, even if it means taking their life. And I hope we never take for granted gatherings like we're a part of in a moment like this. Because I want you to understand something. I think our perspective, the grace and the blessing that we enjoy to just show up for church and get out of it what we might, numbs us to the reality that this isn't just a feel-good thing. We're not here to get our weekly dose of encouragement, though I hope it is that. We're not here to gather in a space that makes us feel better about ourselves or better about what God wants for us, though I hope that you experience that. This is, we are in the room, online, all campuses, a part of a global movement that is not ours, but instead is our God's. That God came in human flesh as the King to rescue a broken, fallen, sinful people like us. And this is a movement in which the King will advance his kingdom. And ironically enough, the fastest growing segments of Christianity around the world are growing in the spaces where those people may not have their lives after their worship services. Because this isn't a feel-good message. This is a King advancing his kingdom in and through us. This is real and it matters. But as a side note, if you're going through tough times, if you're in a tough season, if it's a heavy season, if the doctor's report didn't come out the way you wanted, if the relationship isn't where you wanted it to be, if your kids aren't living the way you had hoped them to live, if circumstances aren't how you would pick them, I also want you to know, I think the book of James will encourage you. Because he's writing to people that in the real grand perspective of things have it much worse than probably most of us. One more thing I want you to know about the book of James and why I'm excited to work through it is James is exploring the relationship between faith, what we believe about God, and works, how we flesh that faith out. He's exploring the relationship between faith and works, and how that should impact life in our city and the world. Now, make no mistake about it, James wasn't writing to the believers of Pinellas County, but James was writing in such a way that come hard times or good times, the way we follow Jesus, the way we follow this king who is advancing his kingdom and nothing in this world can stop it, ought to impact our city. It ought to impact our workplace. It ought to impact our families, and it ought to impact our homes. And just for clarity, I mean impact in a positive way. So get ready for a little spiritual training, all right? James is going to respectfully kick our butts a little bit as we get called out, called toward, and called up. I want you to hear it directly from him, maybe starting with a better question than even my own perspective. But let's start here. How do we live out our faith when life gets tough? And maybe for some of us, why does it matter? How do we live out our faith when life gets tough? And why does that matter? Maybe the bigger question that you need to ask yourself, piggybacking with this, is does the way you exercise your faith, does your belief in Jesus impact other people? Maybe that's the place to start, because for some of us, this faith thing doesn't express itself in a way that looks different in our lives than compared to anybody else. So why would it matter how we navigate hard times? I don't want you to take my perspective on it. I want you to hear from the brother of Jesus about what his brother's life, death, and resurrection could mean for you and I, and how it could change our home, our city, where we live, and what we're a part of. Because I think the temptation for a lot of us is when the relationship gets difficult, we hopefully turn to God. But our prayer becomes, God, here I am again, and I need you to fix them because they are a hot mess. God, this relationship isn't working out, and I'm gonna leave if you don't show up on their behalf. God, my job is tough. The boss is insane. It's ridiculous. He's mean. She's abusive, it feels like. God, the work is hard. So God, if you don't fix that, I'm out. God, finances, I'm here again. God, if you don't give me the right numbers so I hit the grand jackpot, which by the way, I'll give some back to you, I don't know what I'll do, God. God, if this prognosis doesn't come back from the doctor the way that I'm hoping it, I don't know what my next step will be. God, if you don't give me enough wisdom to come up with such a great comeback to post on that post that I know is a subtweet about me, then I'm gonna block them forever, God. Yeah, you know, I think for a lot of us, we're comfortable with the idea of taking our problems to God, but when we take those problems to God, I think where it tends to stop is we say, God, can you fix all of that? Never approaching God as if God might be wanting to do something in us. Because God didn't sign up to be your personal Mr. Fix-It. God is a God of deep heart transformation, to take the sin and brokenness in us and make it right because of the blood that his son shed on the cross. How do we live out our faith when it gets tough? And why does that matter? Let's hear the brother of Jesus' very perspective. The second sentence he writes in the very first chapter of his book, verse 2, says this: count it all joy, my brothers and sisters. He's writing to the whole church. Count it all joy when you meet trials of various kinds. Let me check it again. That can't be right. Count it all joy, my brothers and sisters, when you meet trials of various kinds. I told you some of this is not going to land really well, because what it seems like is James is commanding us to be joyful when things don't go our way. And that's not the feel-good message I came to hear. I don't know about you, right? And I kid you not, as a pastor, to wrestle with some of these scriptures before we present them, our whole teaching team is like this. I'm very grateful for the godly folks that are a part of this church. But we wrestle with these things to make sure God's doing the work in us so that when we're standing up here, we're leading from a place of wanting God to grow us before we even present this to anyone. Not that we get it all right all the time. You can confirm that with my wife. I don't either. But I do pray that God's working in me to prepare me to lead from a place of experience with this stuff. And I kid you not, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, that I got in my truck this morning to head to church and the battery's dead. You can't plan for this. And I'll be completely honest that when my truck went, my first response wasn't, yeah, I got problems. I'm about to preach on James. Look at me go. Because that's how I felt. And just to make sure I'm really, really clear, I don't think that's what James means either. That when hard times come, suddenly we fake a happiness that's not based in reality or even in truth, as if we're some sort of sadistic creatures that love pain inflicted to us. But let's be real for a moment. Some of us know the weight of life that's much more significant than just a dead battery. Some of us know the weight when the relationship isn't working out or when the divorce papers have come. Some of us know the weight of seeing kids walk away from a faith that you believed they were growing into. Some of us know the weight of the difficulties at work and the strain of the finances and the difficulty in relationship with family members. Count it joy? Joy? Like when I deal with that again, or when I wake up 6 months into the same trial that I've been navigating, that I'm supposed to look in the mirror and smile and say, I'm counting it joy because James said to. That's not what James is suggesting. Because joy is the in spite of feeling. Joy is this deep inside sense in us that is more than what a happiness emotion can be because of. Happiness is because of something. Joy is in spite of. And what James is reminding us is he's saying, guys, remember what my brother, remember what his life meant. Remember what his teachings were about. Remember what his death and resurrection has implications for us for. Because then when trials come, then we can choose joy. Because we know that God is with us. God's presence can bring us joy, even when trials can't. Don't fake this until you make this. Choose this because we can have this. The temptation for all of us as human beings is that when we're met with difficulty, we have one of two psychological responses. Fight, where we say, I'm gonna beat this problem into submission, or flight, we got an issue and I'm out of here. But James is suggesting a third opportunity because of the power of God and the truth of his resurrection. That when life's problems come, and they will, because faith doesn't take those away. We live in a broken, painful, hurting world. That when trials come and we see the size and scope of the financial stress and the relational strains and the difficulties we're facing and the confusion of the world and the conflict and tensions in our politics and the size of our mountains, there is an easy temptation to look at those and say, my God, they're going to overtake me. But James reminds us that when we shift our perspective, that when we see the size of the mountains, because that's real, when we see the size and scope of the trials, those are real, that in those moments, we don't remind ourselves of the size of the trials, we remind ourselves that those trials pale in comparison to the size of our God. And it's in the space that when life gets difficult, we can say, I will count it joy because these trials don't hold a candle to the size, scope, and power of the living, breathing God that is at work in me. And imagine if we truly lived from that place saying, and this hurts, I wouldn't have picked this. I wouldn't choose this for myself. But God, I know that you are with me. I can't run from this. I can't wrestle this problem to fix the way I want to. So God, I will face it because you're here. This is a half-brother of Jesus saying, guys, don't forget the power, the resurrection power that my brother demonstrated and it now lives in you. Because the very next thing James wrote as he was writing to people that were scattered in their faith, new believers figuring this thing out, was this. For you know, like believe it, hold tightly to it, that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. Some translations say perseverance. That you know the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect, or some translations say mature and complete, lacking in nothing. You see, there will never be a circumstance that you and I will find ourselves in that's beyond the scope of our sovereign, all-knowing, all-in-control God is ready to handle. So sometimes what we simply need is the perspective shift that says, God, don't let me focus on the size of my trial, but instead let me walk through the trials focused on the size of my God. And in that moment, it produces, that perspective shift produces an experience in us where we get to walk with God and God walks with us, and that will change us. It can't but change us. That's part of it. But see, the growth won't come from running from a problem, and the growth won't come from trying to fix it the way we want it. Growth comes when we walk through it. And that's the beauty of what James is reminding us, that when we walk through those problems, we get to do so steadfast, persevering. In other words, with unwavering faith. It's the difference between when difficulties come and we see people naturally reacting to them, of bouncing between, God help me, I'm going down, to I've got to fix this and do this myself, bouncing between truth and doubt, bouncing between I can do this to I can't do this, bouncing between I don't know what to do, bouncing from I don't know what the next step is, bouncing from the hopelessness and despair that comes from not knowing what the right response is, instead saying, if he's done it before, then he can do it again. And he'll do it with and in me. So this is the weight room stuff, that there's no promises that we're suddenly, all of our problems just disappear. It's a promise that we get to navigate life's problems with the very presence of God. By changing our perspective, we learn what it's like to experience trials with God. My 6-year-old son, Judah, is in the middle of a rash of teeth falling out. I think the tooth fairy, I should charge her rent because she's at my house so often. I'm also going broke thanks to the tooth fairy. The first time his teeth started falling out, I'll never forget, like, there's just so much anxiety at what's on the other side of this tooth pull, right? It's anxious. Is it gonna hurt? Is it gonna bleed? What's gonna happen? And Judah, he's a lot like his dad, that he's way too dramatic for any one human being. So when those tooth were about to be pulled the first time, man, he threw a fit. Just like blowing up. And we knew it had to come out because it was like dangling by a thread and we were worried he'd swallow it while he was sleeping. So we finally got that one out and moved on to the next one. A few days later, another tooth is coming out. Same thing. I don't want my teeth pulled. I can't do this. Don't touch it. Stay away. This is the worst day of my life. And so his mom's like, all right, just let me wiggle it. And she grabs the paper towel and she's wiggling it a little bit right in the midst of a great dramatic expression. I can't do this. I'm watching it happen and I started laughing. Judah, why are you afraid? Because mom's going to pull my tooth. And I said, Judah, she's holding your tooth. It came out when you flailed back. And he's like, It was the cutest thing, the poor little guy. A couple days later, another tooth is loose. It's time to pull it. It's dangling by a thread. And I loved how he progressed in his steadfastness. This was still a trial. It was still uncertain. There's still the unknown of it. He's still just 6 years old. But this time when mom came close, he was a little bit more ready, that instead of flailing, mom's reaching for it, and he's going to take a big, deep breath, and he just happened to lean forward a little bit. And he finished the breath, and Tiffany's like, oh, it came out already. And he learned a very micro example. That the more I trust my mom in those moments, the more my mom comes through for me and I don't have to fear. And I wonder how often, James being the very brother of Jesus, who is God in human flesh, I wonder how often God's even looking at us saying, hey, hold tightly to what James says. Because our God is not a God of chaos, confusion, anxiety, and uncertainty. He's a God of peace. But we have to be willing to stand and trust. God, I'm scared. God, it hurts. God, I wouldn't pick this. But God, I want to trust you. Steadfastness that will mature us and better complete us to live out our faith. Imagine, as believers, if we really got good at living through difficult times. Because as followers of Jesus, knowing that the power of God is at work in and through us, we ought to be the best in the world at navigating hard times. I didn't say as believers, we ought to be the best in the world at not crying and not feeling pain and not being hurt, disappointed, or confused and scared. I said as believers, we ought to be the best at navigating them. Because we don't spend time dwelling on the size of our problems. We spend time finding comfort in the size of our God at work in us. How would that change the world if they saw people that had a peace that was beyond understanding? And I think that's part of why James wanted to not only call us out, consider it joy, call us toward holding tight in steadfastness, perseverance, unwavering faith, but he was also willing to call us up. And here's the very next thing James wrote in this passage. If any of you lacks wisdom, ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach. Meaning you don't have to be afraid of it. Ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him. In other words, James is saying difficult times will come. Count it joy. Call out, I'm calling you out. Don't panic, don't stress. Joy, choose joy. He's calling us towards, remember, stay steadfast in the purposes that God, to which God has called you. But he's calling us up saying, remember, God wants to walk with you. So in the hurt, in the doubt, in the chaos and confusion, remind yourself that's not God. So God, would you give me wisdom to take just the next step? God, would you give me wisdom about how to handle this relational situation? God, would you give me wisdom with my finances so I'm not here again next month? God, would you give me wisdom in how to have this conversation and how to move forward with this prognosis? God, would you give me wisdom? Because see, God's not sitting off in heaven spinning the world saying, well, I hope they figure it out. God's saying, hey, can I walk with you? Can I talk with you? Can I give you wisdom for these moments to remind you that yes, sometimes it'll hurt. Yes, sometimes it's scary, but I'm bigger than that and still hold the whole world in my hands. He's calling us up. But see, wisdom, it takes time. It's not just a download fast food. You order it and it's handed out a window and suddenly you're wiser. It's in the journey of doing life, walking life, trusting God through life that you recognize that God is still at work in you and me. And that's a powerful comfort that this world can't offer. I kind of wonder if this big idea would be true. We need to spend less time trying to change our circumstances and more time allowing God to change us. God, can you fix them? God, can you fix this account? Can you give me the right lotto numbers? God, could you fix my boss? Could you fix my coworkers? Could you fix my spouse? Will you fix my kids? Will you fix the crazy uncle? God, will you fix all these things? Instead of saying, God, it hurts. I don't understand it. It's a little bit scary. But God, would you do something in me that helps me grow? God, would you do something in me that changes me, that grows me? Because I got to be honest with you. The circumstances, the trials in life, trials don't always get fixed. Or at least trials don't always get fixed the way we want them to. So we really have two choices when trials come, is we can get frustrated. We can get stuck. God, how could you? God, what's your problem? God, why am I dealing with this? God, why aren't you fixing them? God, why aren't you at work in this? Or we can get stuck, or you say, God, would you do something in me that changes me? I told you a little bit of this is gonna be like heading to the gym spiritually. I've been going to the gym now for 4 years, believe it or not. I know at first glance, it may not look that way, all right? The diet's not good, that's a separate issue. Don't judge me. But who I am in the gym today is so different than who I was 4 years ago when I first showed up. Shout out to Matt and Steven that have been coaching me and training me, showing up for me and with me, being a part of that journey. But what wouldn't work in the gym is for me to show up and see how much they wanted me to lift and say, man, that seems heavy, I'm not interested. It wouldn't work for me to see the workout and say, man, I think that's gonna make me sweat. I don't wanna do that. I can't show up and say, oh, that sounds really hard. That's gonna push me, that's too much. I don't want all these things. That'd be like trying to pray away problems. But instead, trusting the process, trusting those that are walking with me, trusting those that are showing up with me. Instead, I've put in the work. And dare I say, I kind of like going to the gym. Does it hurt sometimes? Yes, sometimes for days. But who I am today is different than who I was 4 years ago because I've trusted the process. I think some of us need to spend less time trying to pray away circumstances and more time trusting the work of God in us. And while I'm in the neighborhood, simply because I am one too, hey, parents, some of us need to spend less time trying to mow down the problems in our kids' life, less time trying to remove our kids from the problem or fix a problem for them, and more time celebrating the opportunities for growth that come their way. We need to do that with our friends. We need to do that with our family members. We need to do that with coworkers, where we don't get afraid of problems, but instead celebrate the growth that could come with them if we'll allow God to work. So real quick, let me wrap it up. What do I do in a trial? All right, note takers, you're gonna love me. 5 things. Write these down so when they come, you can remember them. What do I do in a trial? The first thing is this: don't quit. And some of you, that's the message you need to hear from God today. Don't quit. The only way that you forfeit the work of God that he's trying to do in your life is when you quit and run from the problem and don't allow him to work. Don't quit. Don't quit. Second thing, be present. Be present in the problem. In other words, it's okay some days for you to simply say, today was not a good day. Today hurt. Today was heavy, it was scary, it was concerning. Be present. What I mean by that is it's a very real temptation to flight, to turn to substances, to turn to other things, to try to escape from pain, to try to escape from situations and escape from those things. Be present, because it's in that space that God will do his work. The third thing, ask God for wisdom. Please note that I said ask God, not Google. I think a lot of us turn to the internet to find wisdom in life as if everything on the internet is true. But Google doesn't want to walk with you, God does. And he's bigger than the size of the trials that we were faced. Number four, stay focused. Stay focused when it hurts. Stay focused when it's scary. Stay focused when you want to give up. Stay focused in those moments because you remind yourself the perspective shift that we need is to not see trials as the overwhelming thing, but instead to see God as overwhelmingly larger than our trials. Because to put it the other way around will cause us to lose hope, and I'm begging you, don't lose hope. Because if you give up on God when he hasn't given up on you, you take away the opportunity for God to do some of his best, most life-transforming work in you. Skeptical? Don't take my word off for it. This is the word of their very brother of Jesus. New to faith? Count it joy. Hold tight, steadfast, and talk to God about it. Been a believer for a while, called out, called toward, called up. It's got to go back to what we do when life gets difficult and whether or not that's going to impact people. Now, make no mistake about it. This is not a magic formula. This is not something I can offer you. These are simply the words from Jesus's brother that said, hey guys, remember, my brother died, but he's alive. And he wants to be at work in you and me. That's why even in moments where we're called out, called toward, and called up, we live with hope because God is alive and loves us deeply. Would you pray with me? Jesus, thank you. Thank you for the depth of your love for each person receiving this message because it was enough love that it cost you your life. But even death couldn't stop you and you rose again. So God, sometimes as a follower, I know at least me, I need to be called out and reminded of things. Because God, I'm just as tempted as everybody else to see my trials as overwhelming instead of seeing my God as being so much bigger. So God, would you make us a people that counts it joy when trials come, that hold tight and steadfast and desire to walk with you. God, because we can, because you loved us enough to die for us. Thank you, Jesus, that is true. It's in your name we pray, amen.
You can't run from the tough times of this world, but God does walk with you. So next time you're in a trial, big or small, instead of spending all your energy trying to change the circumstances, ask yourself, how can it change me? Remember, when our faith gets tested, it gives us an opportunity to grow. Don't forget to follow along with us on Facebook and Instagram for the next few weeks as we continue to dig into the book of James with our daily devotionals. Have a great week, everyone.